Okay. Thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Laura Buenabad, who will be speaking with us this hour. Laura is Senior Director of Technology and Marketing Flexible Packaging at Sonoco. So this interview is an element of IRI's new sustainability community. And the sustainability community provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote sustainability in your innovation practices. As the community grows, you will be able to access facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. These are always the fourth Thursday of the month, and one will be taking place tomorrow at 11 Eastern. If you want the invitation and you don't already have it, just let me know and I'll forward it to you. We also have case studies and white papers with industry examples. We've got one coming out very shortly. I'm just waiting for final approval. It's going through comms. We have workshops, like the one we'll be having on March 22nd on the corporate sustainability journey. If you'd like more information on that, just let me know. And we have updates with insights and additional resources and interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these always take place on the fourth Thursday of the month at noon Eastern. And next month, we'll be interviewing Rebecca Ott from J.M. Smucker. All right, just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Laura. First, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. And once we open the floor to questions, you can type your question into the chat and I'll read it out for you. Or you can come on video and ask your question face to face. I think we might be able to handle it with this number. Okay, all of the boring stuff is out of the way. Laura, again, thank you for joining me today. Welcome.
Thank you.
So can you tell us about your background and about Sonoco?
Yeah, well, first about Sonoco. Sonoco is a public packaging company. We have 124 years. So have been around for a long time. We have a very diversified packaging portfolio from metal cans that are used for beans and tomato sauce to paper cans that are used for peanuts, baby formula, biscuits. We also have a rigid plastics group that is looking into produce trays and clamshells. We have tubes and cores and also paper mills that produce recycled paperboard and other type of packages, including temperature control packaging for pharmaceuticals, packaging for the shipment of appliances. And the group that I'm currently focused on is flexible packaging. And then a little bit about me, I studied chemical engineering. I started my career as a technical service engineer at Johnson & Johnson with the medical division. And later on, I joined Sonoco. I have been with Sonoco for 22 years. My current role, as you mentioned, is leading the technology and marketing groups in the flexible packaging unit. So excited to join you and talk about sustainability and innovation today.
Great, thanks. So where does sustainability sit at Sonoco and how does it kind of cascade throughout the organization?
Yeah. So we have a centralized sustainability department. The head of the department reports directly to our CEO. And so they provide the service and the connection to all the different business units. And that department includes what we call sustainability and environmental. So on the sustainability side is how we are, what we are doing related to making our products more sustainable. And on the environmental side, you know, the focus on how much water we use or energy we use to produce our products. So it includes both items.
And so how does Sonoco define sustainable products? That's a tricky one, especially in packaging, I know.
Yes, it really is, the answer is what our customers define it. So it is the sustainable products for us is the, what responds to the sustainability goals of our customers. So that there's a lot of different versions of that. Our different customers are focused on different things. So it can start from lightweighting, so using less pounds of packaging. And they accomplish that by either downgauging in their current format or change to a completely different format that is use less packaging, less weight of material. There's others focus on using less plastic, so specifically certain materials that are being replaced. Others that are focused on ensuring that we are using renewable sources, so a lot of focus and on using paper fibers that are renewable sources. In other cases, it includes including in the packaging recycled content, whether it's recycled paper, recycled films that comes from different plastics. And then last one, I think what sometimes tends to be also, resonates a lot with consumers is recyclable. So a package that is easy to put in a bin and that we know is going to be sorted and processed and become another package. So the definition could be some of that or all of the above, depending on the focus of each one of our customers.
Okay. And so how is sustainability then integrated into the strategy and the technology roadmaps and all the things?
Yeah, so first of all, every business unit's strategy incorporates sustainability. So as we go through the cycle of developing our strategies, we look into how to incorporate that. And so the first part is have a very clear understanding of what are the customer needs, what package formats they are using, what goals they are setting for sustainability, and then understand, also what our competitors are doing and what they are offering. We basically put ourselves in the shoes of the packaging engineer or the procurement manager at the CPGs and consider, if their corporation have these specific sustainability goals and looking at the package they are currently in, what will be the next package that they needed to move to in order to meet the goals? And that package may exist today or may not exist today. And so if we already offer it and we don't have the business of that CPG, it becomes an opportunity for us to grow and we can go and offer it so that we can help them meet their goals. For the business that we currently have, we can make sure we continue, evolve and renovate ourselves so that we make tweaks to the current package that we sell so that we help them meet their goals through those changes. So in the strategic plan, we will identify those opportunities to defend our business and to grow our business through those sustainable solutions. So if the package doesn't exist or we don't make it today, then it becomes incorporated in our technology roadmaps because there's going to be those be solutions that we have to develop. And through all that, I will add, we look into the capital and the expense of doing that development. In the case of capital, we actually highlight if the capital is needed for a sustainability goal or is sustainability related. So it gets, seen with those lens of a priority because it's related to sustainability.
Okay, and so kind of following on from that, how is it driving your innovation priorities and, the focus of your new product development team?
Well, first of all, I'll, start with significant portion of the R&D and the product development activity is right now focused on sustainability. We're looking into tailoring the design of our package and the success criteria of that design based on all the different inputs that have to be considered. So first of all, again, understanding very clearly what are the goals of our customer and what is the need of the application, what food is going to be inside, how they're going to pack it, where they're going to distribute it so that we still consider all that. But then also a very clear understanding of the current state and what we could see being the potential future scenarios of the infrastructure. So for that specific package, is there actually a place where the consumer can put it so that it gets collected, it can be sorted, it can be processed to become something else in the case of if the focus is recyclability. And then also as part of the very important inputs is understanding the current state and maybe the future that is coming related to regulations. So if there's a specific guideline that is going to come up, or including even the voluntary label schemes that some of our customers want to use in their package to make sure that the design is going to be able to pass those type of tests or comply with a specific regulation so that they can have that. And all of that is obviously the sustainability path of a part of the criteria, but that doesn't mean we eliminate everything else that has to be included in the design. So the package still has to perform, it still has to be at the right cost and meet all the regulatory, you know, food contact compliance and so on that every package needs to meet. So it's a combination of all those elements to be able to make sure we have a design that is going to work for our customer and that is going to be more sustainable the way they define sustainability. I will add to that is that in the case of Sonoco, because of the diversity of our portfolio, we are able to really understand very well what happens in the different streams. We have a paper mill, so we are able to put our paper-based package into the paper mill, work with the paper laboratories to make sure that, you know, if the product is going to be collected and reprocessed, that it's easy to repulp it, make new paper out of it, and really validate that because we have the scale to do that. Same thing, we have a recovery facilities as part of our recycling division. So we are able to demonstrate whether, you know, a clamshell or a tray or a metal can be sorted through those recovery facilities and go to the right stream so that it gets collected where it can be then recovered and reprocessed. So that helps a lot on advancing our development that way. And we also, I will say, you know, related to product development, we have one of the top development teams, I will say, for every one of our groups, experts and recognizing the industry, but we at the same time recognize we cannot develop all internally. So we do leverage a lot the network, running, you know, technology scouting challenges to find, you know, whether our suppliers or other suppliers in adjacent industries are developing things that we can incorporate as part of our sustainability development, and including, you know, conversations that we have with academia and projects that we sponsor through research, all with, you know, looking into getting ideas that are in different stages of technical readiness, but, you know, it's all going to feed our development over the next years.
So you touched on this a little bit, but I want to dive deeper on life cycle analysis. So what's your approach there?
Well, we do have in-house a person that is an expert on running life cycle analysis. So that allows us to very quickly go through that process. We have access to having the validation of those analyses through a third party, and when that is needed. And what we are working on is incorporating this analysis into the stage gate process. So as the engineers are working to through, you know, different options of designs, they can then incorporate the information from the life cycle analysis and see, you know, how the new product that they are recommending is going to advance the footprint of that solution. So we're incorporating that, and it becomes an element and that helps provide direction and priority.
Okay, so switching gears slightly to the staffing side of things. So how do you keep staff engaged in all the sustainability efforts once you get past those kind of quick wins and things people get excited about when you're in for the long haul? How do you keep them going?
Yeah. Well, in the first place, I think like keeping people motivated or excited, it all relates to what is the purpose that they are looking for. For some team members, their purpose is really, you know, enhanced by the impact that they can make in society problems, you know. So if they are passionate about doing something about climate change or food waste and so on, you know, it's very direct the impact that they can make through working on some of these projects, and that keeps them motivated. But for others, you know, outside of, even though it's a sustainability topic, their joy is really on the creation, on being able to, you know, develop new intellectual property and file patents and create truly new things that are, in this case, sustainability related. For others, it's about the growth mindset. Sustainability is an endless topic. We all keep learning about it every single day, and every day there's something new. So that constant learning motivates some people that are looking for that constant growth. And then lastly, you know, in some cases, it's about financial goals. So how your projects meet the financial goals of the company and meet your personal financial goals.
Yeah, that always helps. So what training do you offer staff then?
Well, we do a lot of internal webinars. So as the different groups are learning new information around sustainability, we can all share with each other. We also do field trips. So the opportunity to go to one of our recovery facilities is priceless. You know, when you are able to just go to and see how actually things come from the curbside recycling pickup and put in a place and then sort it out through different ways so that you have plastic in the right place and paper in the right place and metal and aluminum. Just being able to see that helps a lot to understand what happens and how you have to design your package so that it goes in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Going to see recyclers, so the people that receive either the paper or the plastic and then make it as being able to be reusable, it helps a lot to understand that process as well. I mentioned earlier, we focus a lot on open innovation. So learning from what our suppliers are doing on sustainability. So with the support of our supply management group, we ask every supplier when they come and talk to us and they do a business review to always include what they are working on related to innovation on sustainability. And that keeps being learning for our groups. And then general market awareness, you know, we all need to make sure we stay in the know of what our customers are doing, what the commitments they are making, whether they are piloting or launching something in a specific region, any package conversion that happens, just general industry innovation that it's all incorporated. And so we make sure that we share all that and it's part of the constant learning of all of us.
Okay. And you touched on this earlier, but I want to come back to the regulatory landscape. You're dealing with food and all kinds of stuff. So how do you deal with the shifting regulations there?
Well, it's a constant effort of staying in the know of the current state and then being able to identify those weak or maybe not so weak signals of upcoming changes and then understanding the timing of those changes. Our sustainability group does a lot of that effort where they are focused on, you know, being, you know, the forefront, understanding what's going to happen and then communicating that to us, because then as we learn that, whether it's a upcoming change or something that is being considered, it has to be an input for us to adapt and in some cases, maybe pivot on our development plans, because what we are developing today that is going to be in the market, if gets launched by the time that regulation becomes in place, is, you know, we need to make sure we still meet that. Mm-hmm. So is that constant feedback, input of what is going to happen of regulation so that we make sure that the path that we are focused on related to certain development is still matches what is going to be in place related to regulations. And it's not only just receiving what the regulation is going to be, but it's also we actively participate in some of the working groups in the trade associations, depending on the different packaging formats. We have a technical person in some of those working groups so that they can understand, you know, as and provide input or feedback as new test methods are being developed for that format or as new guidelines are going to be published, that we are able to contribute with our expertise and from our technical side and basically help influence and tailor what makes sense so that it can be something that can be used at scale and it makes sense for the industry in general. And we do it together with some of those trade associations.
Okay. And so, again, shifting gears a little bit, trying to cram too much into a short period of time. What about supply chain issues? How have the recent issues there impacted your efforts?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, 2021 and 2022 were very difficult. I think we all lived through it. Above all, I would say successfully, we kept our customers running despite all those challenges. And from the technical side, we were able to prioritize our R&D group to continue advancing sustainability and in a way, a bit of isolating them so that the rest of the organization, which in, you know, mainly application development and supply management and so on, could be focused on qualifying multiple alternate materials that we could, you know, use in replacement of what maybe was not available in that moment and keep our plants running. But we made the decision that we needed to continue innovation moving forward despite all the supply chain issues. And we were, you know, fortunate that we have a strong team and a strong leadership that allows us to do that. And so our sustainability development continued during those years.
I
wanted to add that because we were looking for sometimes new suppliers to find that alternate material that we needed to find as replacement, that exposed us also to new suppliers that maybe we didn't have a relationship with, and then learn what they were doing on sustainability and incorporate them within our network. So it actually helped in a way through that, making new connections and expanding our network.
Sometimes necessity. Necessity breeds success? No, there's a say. I can't remember what it is. Somebody put it in the chat and remind me.
All right.
But it was interesting that you were able to kind of ring fence the innovation and R&D function too, because a lot of companies I've heard about, you know, it was a burden. You know, they obviously wanted to help during the time of crisis, but, you know, people like to develop new things. They like to develop new products. That's why they got into this. And it's really hard to not see that as your focus anymore.
Yes, absolutely.
So, all right, everyone's favorite topic, metrics. How do you measure the success of all of the efforts that you're doing?
Well, it's obviously hard, you know, because you are looking into sustainability for, you know, in many cases it's meeting goals and it's the right thing to do. But at the end of the day, you know, both our customers and in our case, we are profit organizations. So the way the impact of sustainability really can be seen is on the new business that we can gain because we had a sustainable solution. So if I got a new customer or expanded relationship with a customer because I had a product that was able to replace what they currently had or and help them meet their goals, is new business that we got. And so that is a win for us and it's a win for our customers. Same thing related to retaining business. You know, if we can continue our volume and growing our volume with our current business, and we did it because our package kept answering to the needs of our customer on what they needed to do related to sustainability, and we retain that business, it's a way that we look at it as making sure that it is still, through sustainability, we are providing benefit and value to the organizations.
Yeah, that's a tough one. All right, I've got one last question. We've already got a bunch of stuff coming into the chat, but I want to get my last one in. So looking ahead, you know, how do you want your sustainability journey to evolve from where you are currently?
Well, maybe not as specific to us, but the packaging industry in general, what we can observe at this point is an evolution where the industry is leaning more towards the overall climate impact versus focusing either exclusively on the beginning of life or the end of life of that package, but really looking at the overall life cycle. We can really see a lot of activity on regulation, so that maybe some of those regulations and the label schemes are going to really define the path or the priorities where the industry is going to move towards. We envision that there's going to be a lot of further investment on the infrastructure, because it's not only about making the package, but then what happens after that. And then also we can already observe some increase on partnerships. So a lot of it's very hard to solve it as an individual part of the supply chain. So a lot of those supply chain challenges can be addressed if there's enough partnership along the supply chain to make sure there's demand for what is being produced or what want to be included as a recycled content. So I think there's going to be a lot of changes coming up, and it just continues being that way.
Yeah, it's so hard to stay on top of things. All right. Bunch of questions coming in. And the first one, I'm not sure of the acronym here. So do you also look at EPR fee? I'm not sure what EPR is.
Yeah, extended producer responsibility.
Okay. So do you look at EPR fee reduction as part of your stage gate analysis or just LCA or life cycle analysis? I figured out that.
Very good. Yeah, so it depends on the regions of the world. So for some of our business units, that especially those that have a strong presence in Europe, we live through that, because EPRs have been used for a long time. So our customers tend to put their goals and or their objectives towards reducing the fees that they had to pay. And so therefore that drives moving towards a specific type of packaging or change the package in a way so that EPR fees can be reduced. North America, it is one of those regulations that are coming up. There have been bills that are being put up front in the specific states. We see that, you know, activity increasing over the next months and years. There's objectives for certain states to have something in place by 2024, 2025, and, you know, and so on. So depending if all of that gets approved, it may drive also changes in the North America packaging industry. And hopefully at some point, maybe at a federal level, and that will make things easier for a lot of us, because most of us will supply in most states and not at a regional level.
Yeah, that's super tricky. All right. So how do you see your how do you or your customers see biodegradable / compostable versus recyclable flexible packaging?
I will say in general, compostability has been deprioritized by most of our customers and as a result also by us, really mainly around the infrastructure, because there's very limited access to a place where a compostable package can be accepted. I think, you know, depending on what article you read, is between 2-3% of the American population that may have access to a place where they can be industrial compostable access. So based on that, it's very difficult to really make the claim. And in some cases, that compostable material, if they don't find a place where it can be collected, it's either going to go to the landfill, or even sometimes worse, it's going to go to a recycling system and create a contamination in that recycling system. The other option is home composting, but that's also a very hard one. You know, there's very few. I don't know what the percentage is today in North America or how many households actually have a composting bin on their backyard. So that's even more difficult to access. So because of that, the infrastructure, the access is that it tends to be deprioritized and really not a focus.
Yeah, I could see that. Some of them are
nice,
just too big.
Wow.
And bulky for my system. You know, I've got one I crank, and then I've got a yard waste one, and it's a whole thing, but they get too big, especially if foods touch them. I can't put them into the yard waste one. I have a complicated system, clearly.
Well, it's right. Good for you to try.
Yeah, it's good for my garden too. So, all right. So how do you learn whether a more sustainable product can achieve a higher price? Tricky.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is through conversations with our customers. You know, they're in some cases, depending on the companies, you know, they send the message of we are truly committed to sustainability. We have the goals and we mean to, you know, it's more than aspirational goal. We mean to actually meet the goals. And in some cases that requires for those companies, especially at the beginning, to pay more for the package. And so we do have some cases where of companies, like some of our customers like that, that they're willing to pay and replace a package that we used to sell to them, replace it for something that they identify as more sustainable and pay more for it. I will say, you know, the majority of the industry in general, you know, especially in North America, given, you know, economic situations and all that, that is difficult to find. And so, you know, obviously this, what we strive towards is to find a way to develop those sustainable solutions at a equal cost, and in some cases offer being able to offer some cost savings if possible. And we have also success on that, where we are going through changes where the new package is not only more sustainable, but it's also less expensive. So it's a great project. So, you know, it you see the spectrum, but it really depends on where the customer stands. The customer, but then also the consumer. You know, for certain products, if the consumer is highly, you know, climate change aware and they are willing to pay for it because it's a very premium type of product, or they buy on a specific very premium brand, those consumers are willing to pay for it. And then so those customers can take advantage of that. And, you know, the hope is that as we use more of those raw materials and we scale the use of sustainable solutions, the demand and the infrastructure and the supply chains are going to be built in a way that we're going to be able to get to that economy of scale and get to the right costing. But right now, a lot of the pilot programs can be an investment to be able to test that.
Sounds like there's kind of a whole spectrum of different products out there.
Yeah.
All right. So how does Sonoco prioritize new sustainable materials development projects, and how is this communicated cross-functionally?
I will say it depends on every business unit, because every business unit is serving a different type of packaging format and a different selection of customers, and those customers are in a different position of, you know, what they are willing to pay and what they're willing to do related to changes and investment. So within the business unit, we go through that strategic plan and understand what I mentioned earlier, you know, what our customers will be wanting to move to. And so in that case, it's those major customers in the major industry that business unit is focused on. And so that way we can define, okay, for our customers, you know, it's important recyclability, or for our customers, it's important recycled content. And then that's what defines what we put in that technology roadmap of that specific business unit. It can be different what it is in another business unit because of that, because we are really very focused on serving the specific customers that buy that specific packaging format. Now, related to how it's communicated, once you are within a business unit, you have the clear goals of, okay, R&D is working on these programs that are going to be developed. And then all the other functions around, we communicate what those programs are. And so supply management knows we are looking for certain specific raw materials. And, you know, marketing knows that those are the ones that we should be talking with, you know, when we talk out externally. And so everybody rallies within that business unit around those programs that have been identified as a priority.
Okay. And so kind of similarly, so how is a new regulatory guideline or assessment rolled out to all the stakeholders?
Well, our sustainability group keeps us up to date. So they put together webinars that, and basically every different business unit is invited, different functional areas are invited. And so we have regular, I think right now is basically monthly, that we get a webinar that is, you know, what is new on regulations related to sustainability, and we learn something new every month. So yeah, and like I said, you know, as I'm listening to those webinars, I'm able to confirm, you know, are the projects that I have as priority in my R&D team is still valid and it's still gonna, you know, match what I'm hearing could be the upcoming regulation. And if it doesn't, we have to adapt and we have to pivot, and we all recognize that's the cycle that has to happen in order to make sure we don't end up finishing a development for something that is no longer the best option given the regulation.
Okay, and what is the proportion of the sustainability initiated projects relative to the overall R&D projects?
Wow. I was, like I say earlier, it's significant. So I don't have an exact number, but I would say at least 3 out of 4 projects are sustainability in R&D. If, yeah.
Okay. And I don't think we've got any additional questions. Does anyone want to jump in? Oh, sorry. I spoke too soon. So lots of flexible packaging is multi-lay film targeting high barrier performance, which is not recyclable. What is the industry's view on this?
Yeah, so what we are working on and a lot, what we are putting out as new developments and launching new products is moving that multi-layer, multi-material solution to a mono-material. In this case, in the United States, because that's where, you know, North America is the focus of our business unit, the infrastructure that is available is either for polyethylene or paper. There's really not collection of anything else for the flexible packaging. So we work towards developing solutions that are going to be accepted in either monomaterial PE or paper base. And so depending on what stream you're going for the paper base, you need, there's a specific criteria to make sure the package gets accepted in the paper stream. Same thing with the PE, which is a store drop-off scheme. And so we are very knowledgeable about the specific test methods and regulation that allows our design, our package to be accepted in one or the other. And we are putting products in the market in both cases, either all paper solutions. We call it all paper and all PE, but it's obviously not 100% because there's certain percentage of non-paper or non-PE material that is what is going to provide the barrier, the graphics, you know, some of the performance and so on. But as long as you stay within a certain percentage, it is considered that the rest is the paper or the PE, it can be accepted. So a lot of our development is towards that. How do you create barrier into a paper-based solution, whether it's moisture or oxygen or grease resistance? And so a lot of our work has been on that, and similarly on the polyethylene side. And then for those applications that the technology is not there, we cannot get to the barrier that we need yet on a mostly PE or mainly paper solution, then, and you have to continue using multi-layer, then the opportunity is to incorporate recycling content. And there's, you know, so we have the ability and we have access to recycled content of polyethylene, both high density and low density. And we can also have access to PET that is from recycled content. So we can incorporate for those materials that are still going to be multi-layer, multi-material, incorporate recycled content. And so that advances the sustainability journey of that package, even though it's not yet recyclable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and this, I think, follows on a little bit from what you were saying. So do you and your customers see the method of how a package is decorated or printed as an important factor of the footprint, or is it really only the material / substrate?
You know, everything counts, the inks, the coatings, the adhesives. So on the test methods that we have to pass in order to be accepted in the recycling streams, we need to make sure that all those components, and so we work with our suppliers of wet goods to make sure that their chemistry is compatible with the way that package is going to be processed when it's recyclable. So yes, it counts definitely.
All right. Any last questions before we wrap up here? And you can feel free to kind of jump in and ask your question face to face, so to speak, by turning on your camera. All right. Well, while we wait and see if anyone wants to do that, I'll go through my ending spiel. I just want to thank everyone for joining us today. And a big thank you to Laura for sharing everything and answering all the questions.
No, thank you for having me.
All right. And next month we will be, and it'll be March 23rd, we'll be talking to Rebecca Ott from JM Smucker. So we're going to learn about one of the food companies that is dealing with the packaging issues as well, I'm sure. And again, if you want any information about that workshop, let me know. I'll include the link to it in the recording email that I'll send out a little later. But in the meantime, Laura, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone who was able to listen.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.